This is Suzanne Ito for ACLU.org. This Thursday, October 4th, 2007, the House Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on Immigration, Citizenship, Refugees, Border Security, and International Law will hear testimony on the issue of medical care in immigrant detention. The ACLU has brought a handful of lawsuits against the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, also known as ICE, for its treatment of immigrants inside its detention facilities. One such case, against the Hutto Detention Center in Taylor, Texas, was recently settled. Two cases against the San Diego Correctional Facility are ongoing. Sandra Kenley was 52 years old when she was taken into ICE custody. A grandmother with sole custody of her granddaughter, Sandra suffered from a hemorrhaging fibroid, high blood pressure, and heart problems. She informed jail medical staff of these conditions and her daily medication requirements. While she was in custody, she wasn't given any of her correct medication. Her health declined rapidly, and she died in detention. Due to conflicting reports from the jail doctors, the medical examiner, and Sandra's cellmate who witnessed her death, Sandra's family still does not know her cause of death. Jody Kent, public policy coordinator for the ACLU's National Prison Project, interviewed Sandra's sister, June Everett, for this podcast.
So, June, when was your sister taken into detention?
She was taken into detention November the 2nd, 2005.
Okay, and how did it happen?
Well, when she came back from Barbados, she was stopped in Miami and detained there. And they released her to come back to Washington through Dulles Airport. And at Dulles, they told her she had to come back in to explain her situation, to clear herself, you know, just to explain herself. And they gave her a date, and she went back on two occasions. She went to Dulles Airport the second time they held her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And did she know that she was going to be detained?
No, she did not. From her understanding of what she said to me is that they had told her all she had to do was just explain her side and just bring evidence, bring all her information and show it to them. And once she explained her side, that was good enough. So that's why she thought she was just going up there and she was coming back home. And on the first occasion, she took her granddaughter with her because she didn't think that they wanted, but they told her, no, she had to come back without her granddaughter. And that's when her son and I went on the second occasion with her.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And what were her medical conditions at the time?
Well, she was suffering from she was hemorrhaging from a fibroid. She had already went to several doctors, and they had scheduled her to have operation because she needed to get it out. It was very big. We took copies of that information from the doctors showing the size of it being very huge. And we also took all the appointment cards and all her medical information and showed it to the ICE officers of the seriousness and the urgency of her condition and having to go into the hospital. And they were preparing her where she was going to a cardiologist also that were checking her heart and different things. She was being monitored so that she could go for this operation.
Mm-hmm. And so when you told the ICE officials about her medical conditions, what did they do?
Well, they did not really pay much attention because I even told them about her high blood pressure and also being disabled mentally. She was slow, and that's why she wanted me there with her. They waited until I went to use the bathroom to interview her by herself. The reason for me being there with her, which we explained to them, was because some of the questions or whatever it is that they wanted to ask her, I would have to help her with because she wasn't sure certain things and her memory sometimes failed her. And I never had the opportunity to help her with that part. When I got back from the bathroom, they had already done the interview with her and was getting ready to lock her up. You know, and this was shocking to me, so I don't know what happened behind my back. So I wasn't there to help her in that part, which I was supposed to.
And so what did she tell you about the treatment that she received when she was in detention?
From what she told me, she hadn't had her medication for her high blood pressure, which she has to take every day. She hadn't had it for weeks. I hadn't heard from her when she first got locked up after I left. for several weeks. We can find out where she was. And then when she did get through to me and she was telling me she hadn't had her high blood pressure pills and she didn't have anything, I was so scared because I knew that she had to have it every day. And she said she was feeling very sick. And then after that, she told me when they did give her something, it was the wrong pills and it made her very sick. You know.
What were her symptoms?
She was dizzy and weak, plus she was hemorrhaging all the time. She was bleeding all the time, and nobody would help her, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you find out that she had died?
Well, after she went to the judge on the 14th of December, I spoke to her on the 13th. Prior to that, I spoke to her every day. And after that, I didn't hear from her for a while, which was very unusual for me. So I had a funny feeling. And then on December the 18th, I was sitting at home, and I got this call from Hampton Regional Jail. I think it might have been about 7:35 in the evening, telling me my sister was dead in jail. And I asked them, how did she die? You know, and they said they weren't sure, but they were going they were doing an autopsy and they thought it was a heart. She had a heart failure, a heart attack.
And do you have clarity now about how your sister died?
No, I still don't have clarity because it's very conflicting to me. Some of the reports I got from the hospital and the ambulance reports, where it took 50 minutes for EMS to get there, and also the ambulance is showing different stories from her cellmate. One thing was said on one report, one thing was said on the other, where she fell and hit her head. They still haven't really told me too much about that part of it. And also, with me requesting information, I never got, it's hard to get. I'm now getting a little bit piece by piece. And what I'm seeing is that the same thing my sister told me is connecting with that, where she didn't get pills from the time she was locked up for about 2 or 3 weeks for her high blood pressure. And that's on some of the stuff I'm reading now. So, you know, it's really hard for me to really figure out what really went wrong and why. Why is she dead right now? Why was she locked up in the first place? And she was no threat to anyone in this society. And that would have been proven where when they requested her to come back, she came back at the time that they asked her to. So she was never trying to run away or hide or do anything. She was trying to do the right thing. And I think that she should have been given a chance, like one of the other guys that was there at the time that came in and just explained his situation, and they let him go. So why didn't they let her go? A grandmother with custody of her granddaughter, with a bleeding fibroid hemorrhaging, with high blood pressure. I mean, these things are very cruel to lock somebody up like this with something that they have already been cleared of without giving them a chance. She never had a chance. And I don't think that that's right.
Thanks for listening to this ACLU podcast. To learn more about the ACLU's cases involving immigrant detention, go to aclu.org/prisons.